Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Making Sam, taking you to jungle lands. Bengals pride, it fills the air. Every week we're always there. Touchdowns, tackles, all the plays. Bengals roar in every way. Stories, news, and game recaps. Jungle juice, we bridge those gaps. Welcome to the Jungle Juice. Mick and Sam, let's break it loose. Cincinnati, hear our call. Bengals fans, unite us all.
Welcome into the latest edition of the Jungle Juice podcast. I'm Sam Gormley. He's Mick Nelson. Mick, happy late Wednesday. It's actually kind of cold now out, and I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I wasn't really expecting that. I think there's like a windstorm that came through like earlier this morning because I could just hear it from my bedroom. Yeah, I'm not working right now for the next few weeks. So I could just hear it from the bedroom this morning, and I was just like, oh, I think it's about to get really cold outside. So,
well, you could tell. I know that there's even some of the snow were that's potentially in
apparently an Appalachian snowstorm is what I've been hearing.
Yeah, or something. I think we're even projected to get like, Nick, and where I live, like a quarter of an inch. Kids might not have school tomorrow because of that. I mean, like a quarter of an inch, like that's big deal. But yeah. I know when I was driving, I went to the Kentucky basketball game last night, and when I was driving home down the Bluegrass Parkway, which is in between, you know, Lexington and where I live, which that road, if you've ever driven it, is there is nothing. There is, it's like the AA highway in a way where it's just straight. You might get some turns, but there's just a whole lot of nothing until you go through Bardstown. And you're like, oh, Bourbon, look, that's awesome. That's really cool. But it was so foggy. Like there were moments where you could barely see right in front of you. And I'm like, thankfully I know this road because if I didn't, I'd be a little bit concerned with where we're at. But I guess we've gone enough off topic about the weather. We've done our obligatory old man chat right about the weather. So now I guess we got to talk about the other thing that everyone's grouchy about, and that's Cincinnati Bengals, right? Or should we just make this an hour-long podcast about the weather? Is that good with you, maybe?
Yeah, let's just make this like, what's something that's good going on right now that we can just talk about?
The Reds signed their qualifying offer to Nick Martinez.
Yeah, that doesn't hit right. I mean, Mark Cope, okay. UK is looking pretty good.
Yeah, 4-0. Kentucky's 4-0. Marshall might be playing for the Sun Belt Championship, right?
Did you get a look at the little reel of him in the huddle talking about how to like defend people's flag on that one play?
Oh, yeah. I watched the entire video, about 15 minutes long of him coaching.
Do you think Cal would have told his team to do that? You know, do you think that would have been
thinking positive. You're trying to back end this into something positive. Right, bringing positive. Me up to John Calipari.
UK's got like an actual like coach and not like a recruiter. Not to shit on John Calipari too much. I mean, he brought you guys a title and multiple Final Four appearances. I think there's always been a question of the X's and the O's with him as opposed to the actual recruiting aspect, but
yeah, anyway, there's some discussion with it. Good. It is, and there's at least it's not all completely negative in my world. We invite you though to follow us on our social media channels. We're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, we're also on your favorite podcasting platform as well. We're on Twitter too. If you want to follow us along there, we're trying to get some more engagement on that aspect as well. But on today's show, we're gonna hit some of the news headlines because there's some interesting things to discuss there. We're going to talk a little bit about the Bengals Chargers. And then I think our big story for today is we're going to kind of play the, I guess you could say, the blame game. And what we mean by that is that you see so much of fan engagement right now on social media is, oh, it's this guy's fault. It's that guy's fault. It's this guy's fault. It's, oh, it's everybody's fault. It's like Oprah, you know, the whole meme of you get a die, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's like that. We're just pointing blame at everyone. So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of go through each of those scenarios and say, is the blame deserved? Where is the blame accurate? Where is it maybe not accurate? And so on for this. And then maybe, depending on time, talk about how we can fix it, which is maybe like, what, 12 shows worth probably on how we're going to fix it?
Yeah.
I think it's probably. There's a lot to break down on that. But first, how about some news headlines? We'll hit that. DJ Turner was placed on IR earlier this week with a clavicle injury. I'm sure we're going to come back to him when we talk about the actual Chargers game, but man, that stinks. He had been playing a really, and he made a, the worst part
the
is
play, that, the play he got hurt on was an amazing play.
Maybe not his best play of the season, because you could probably say the play against the Giants that kind of clinched that win, the PBU, was a big one. But regardless, huge play in that game. He played great. We'll come back to him a little bit later on, but you just hate that. Clavicle injury out. Not necessarily out for the season. Zach Taylor is holding out hope. Maybe they could get him back for like one of those last games of the season. But that almost, you could tell in his tone, was like, if we make the playoffs, maybe he'd be back, but probably not. And that just stinks, because that's like the one position that the Bengals probably couldn't afford another injury. Except maybe tackle, offensive tackle. That would probably
I'd say the season's more or less. I mean, I know we haven't lost the eighth game yet, but I think the season's more or less done to begin, you know, anyways here. But I mean, even if they were one, to make a run, this was the last position group to have an injury on, was the cornerback room. So it sucks for DJ Turner. I agree with you. I think he's played pretty good ball this season. You know, it sucks that your two corners that have actually shown a lot of growth and improvement are the ones that end up having season-ending injuries. You know, they can't get a full season of work in. So that just kind of stinks for DJ Turner, and hopefully he has a really speedy recovery. Good news is that, you know, Josh Newton came in, played pretty well.
Let's come back to that here in a second. Let's hit a couple of the other headlines here really quick too. Bengals acquire Marco Wilson on waivers.
Former Florida Gator.
He is. Fourth round pick by the Cardinals in 2021. You mentioned one of his famous things that he's known for, and that was the infamous shoe throw. I don't know if that's what you were leading into with the Florida Gators.
There's the GIF.
So there is a moment, and it was funny because it was a fog game. And what had happened is that I don't even remember who Florida was playing, but the player he tackled shoe came off. And what he did is he picked up the guy's shoe and threw it to the other end of the field and got called for like an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty or something along the lines of that. He is also famous for, do you know the famous GIF of Andy Dalton when he's with the Saints? He throws the interception and he's like complaining, and in the background, they're jumping into the end zone.
That was Marco Wilson.
Marco Wilson who did that. Okay. So Marco Wilson's kind of a meme worthy guy. Three career interceptions.
Got a meme on the team, isn't that great?
Yes. That's three career interceptions. I mean, he's a body. Like, he's a body. He's a body, and I don't really know that you're going to be expecting much more than that from him. Positive news. Big Willie Anderson is a Hall of Fame semifinalist. Hopefully he actually gets in this year. He's one of the top 25. You look at the list of offensive linemen that are finalists, he's probably the best guy on there. So because of that, you're probably thinking that this might be his chance, and I hope it is.
Yeah, another well-deserved honor for Willie Anderson. Hopefully he gets in this time around. He's been he was a really good offensive tackle for us back in the day, and that's probably an understatement. He was an amazing, second best offensive tackle in franchise history, which he'd be the best tackle in franchise history for a lot of teams. So, fortunately for us, we had Anthony Munoz. So that's, big honor for Willie Anderson. Hopefully he gets in, and it's good to see him on there.
And then the final piece of news, which is interesting. Last year, the NFL made the change that late in the season, they can flex games out of both Thursday night and Monday night football. So for one, the Bengals-Cowboys game cannot be flexed out on Monday night. which for the hilarious reason of they've already done all the work for the Simpsons game, which is really funny that they've already done all the animation and the NFL can't back out now. So they're having to put Bengals Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Then again, can they actually take the Cowboys off of primetime?
You're still going to get a ton of viewership from the Cowboys fan base. I mean, that would be stupid for them to not.
But it's still hilarious. But what is interesting is that a couple weeks later, Bengals Browns Thursday Night Football has the opportunity to potentially be flexed out. That decision, though, would be made Thursday. So tomorrow, at least when we're recording this, would have to be this decision. So I went in and I looked and said, okay, let's see, are there any games that would make sense to potentially slot into that Thursday Night Football slot? So for one, I immediately took off four teams because the Bears, Vikings, Falcons, and Raiders all play on Monday. They're not going to make a team play Monday and Thursday. Like, that's just not going to happen. So a couple of the games that are already that could be happening that week, and we'll just see, should that be slotted into Thursday night? Patriots at Bills. I don't really know that that's that much better. Cardinals at Panthers.
Ew.
Titans at Colts.
No.
Rams at Jets. That one at least makes me go.
I still know.
Eagles at Commanders.
Yes. Well, they already did one Thursday night game. Exactly. So they're probably not going to do another one.
I can't imagine that they would make them play Thursday night twice. But the interesting thing with that is I thought they're playing on Sunday, is Bucks Cowboys is Sunday Night Football. Could they be ballsy enough to take the Cowboys off Sunday Night Football and put in Eagles Commanders in that place? It's a better game, but again, the Cowboys draw when it comes to that. And then The one that would at least make somewhat sense, but again, it's a West Coast team traveling to an East Coast team, is 49ers at Dolphins.
Yeah, still.
I just don't think that that's getting flexed out.
I don't think flexing a Thursday night game in general is a good idea. Like, these games, especially these Thursday night games, should be set in stone throughout the entire season.
Agreed.
Because of the short rests you are getting from Sunday to Thursday. I mean, teams have to be prepared to do all that stuff way ahead of time. I imagine coaches are setting their schedules for the week, you know, for short weeks like that way out in advance. So they're ahead of the curve on that. You're not going to get good football for a Thursday night game that's just going to randomly get flexed in. I think that's a terrible rule, change to what they're doing with the scheduling. And I don't know how any NFL team is happy about that.
Yeah, I agree completely. It would be great. I mean, it would suck for the fans because, I mean, Thursday night game kind of stinks for fans, but still primetime, losing a primetime home game would stink. But for the Bengals itself, it would probably help out a lot. Because right now they're getting ready to play three games in 10 days in that stretch, because they go Monday night, Sunday, Thursday. Mm-hmm. Two of those are on the road. So that would probably be a decent thing if they could get out of that, but I don't think they will. I think the Bengals will play on Thursday night against the Browns. But again, that decision, if they decide that they want to flex, will come tomorrow. So I don't expect anything to change, but it still is at least a possibility to mention. Bengals played the Chargers on Sunday Night Football. It's almost like they're toying with us at this point. It's almost like they're just saying, how can we just do this? How else can we destroy the hearts and the hopes of our fan base? Because we're trying to find every last way. Because the first half was
bad.
I mean, it was just about as bad of a half the Cincinnati Bengals have played. I don't even know.
I think it's the worst, and it reminded me a lot of the game against the Buccaneers in 2022, where whole team came out flat in the first half, and then they just steamrolled the second half, except we had a really good run in the second half of this game, but it wasn't enough to just completely take over the game like they did against the Buccaneers in 2022. But that has to be the worst first half of football I've seen probably since that game. Maybe Steelers 2022 as well. And then the other one that comes to mind is the Jaguars 2021 Thursday Night Football game.
Mm-hmm.
that's where those are the games where I think Zach Taylor got his MO of being the second half coach, right? Where we make our adjustments and then you know, we end up coming out on top. But the problem is that they just haven't been able to close out games this season. And this game was so maddening in the fourth quarter because they had, I think I counted four opportunities to close out the game and they just couldn't do it. I mean, put, you know, Money Mac field, or maybe Mac field goals aside, field goal misses aside. I mean, they just couldn't, you know, you can't be just doing field goal attempts for 50 yards if you know that your kicker is, it has a case of the yips. And I'm not putting too much blame on the Zach Taylor because I think the play calling for those series of downs where they just couldn't convert at like the 30 to 35 yard line wasn't terrible. I mean, you put the game in Joe Burrow's hands and things just didn't work out, which just, you know, it sucks. But I mean, you had four opportunities in the fourth quarter to close out this game and he could not do it. Herbert was missing passes in the fourth quarter for most of the fourth quarter. He was off his game.
He was awful in the second half until the very last drive.
Yeah.
And really, the last drive, I mean, Ladd McConkey was so wide open, even I probably could have made that throw. Like, it going over the middle on that. So it was frustrating or disappointing was more. I think it was like if you could just mesh frustrated and disappointment into one feeling, that's how I felt coming out of it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, what I liked about it is I mean, the answer. They very well could have just folded and said, you know what, we got a 3-hour flight home, or longer than that, probably 4-hour flight home.
5-hour flight.
5-hour. Yeah, we got a long flight home. It's late. Nah, we could, let's just roll over. Let's take our beating and that's right. The bye week's coming up. Let's just start our bye week a little bit early and let's just rest and let's roll in. They didn't do that. They came out there. The defense looked night and day. Now, Herbert didn't help. I mean, Herbert helped with that by not playing very well. But I loved the fight that we saw in the second half that they didn't just lay down and say, come on, bring it on.
No. I mean, I thought the defense played okay in the second half. I think a lot of it was more Herbert error than it was the defense actually coming through. Now, if we talk, I guess we'll go into some good things here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think coverage from two players in particular, I think we're pretty damn good. And I mean, that was DJ Turner, RIP. To his season.
He's alive.
Well, RIP this season. I mean, to 2024 TJ Turner. But he played really well, I think. Three pass breakups, gave up three receptions on six targets for 49 yards. Went out like a champ on the pass breakup where he broke his shoulder. That sucked. He played really well, and I think he might be a future cornerstone piece of the franchise, which I know we said that about Cam Taylor-Britt and look where he's at right now. But I'm thoroughly impressed with the improvement I've seen in DJ Turner this season, and it sucks not to see him again. Yeah, we won't see him again this year. Josh Newton, great game. Three receptions on six targets, 47 yards, two pass breakups. The one on third down in the third quarter, it was on like a go ball that Quentin Johnson
phenomenal
running,
play.
Or yeah.
Phenomenal
body
play.
Extension pass breakup. It was amazing. So yeah, those are two players I want to give a shout out to in coverage because everybody else in coverage was pretty bad.
You ready for your stat here, Mick? Here's a stat for you. You mentioned DJ Turner and Josh Newton. They combined for how many PBUs was it? It was six.
Five?
Or five. 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 You're right. Five. Sorry. I'm reading wrong. Cam Taylor-Britt all season has six pass breakups.
How many touchdowns does Cam Taylor-Britt have?
Nine. Nine.
Oh, Jesus. Nine?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah. There you go. That's showing just for one.
Oh, two of them were on Sunday, by the way.
Correct. Yeah, two of them. Those were the only two catches I believe he allowed in the game. Yeah, not good. Let's come back to that. We're talking positive right now. We're talking positive.
Okay,
We'll come back to that. But yeah, Cam Taylor-Britt all season, six pass breakups. DJ Turner and Josh Newton combined for five on Sunday, which is, yeah. Enough being said.
Yeah.
Offensively, I think we definitely got to give a shout out to T. Higgins. Great nine game. Catches, 148 and a touchdown. It's amazing what he does for this offense.
Yeah, no, I love short yardage T more than anything at this point, you know, and I know he's still really good at high pointing the ball, you know, on deep targets and whatnot. But the guy in short yardage situations has been money this season. And I think that largely continued today. I mean, he's been the third down target. He's been that tight end security blanket type of player. I like that they've incorporated him into the slot, kind of taking that Gesicki role or whatever on third downs or on some pass sets. But yeah, I thought he was incredible in this game.
Another guy on offense that I really liked with it is Chase Brown, especially receiving the ball. And I got a stat for you here, Mick. So Chase Brown, 5 catches for 57 yards. On those 5 catches, according to PFF, he forced 4 missed tackles.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has forced 5 all season.
On reception.
On 18 catches.
Okay.
So it's just showing, and I know I just keep, I don't really want to be on the anti-Joe Mixon train, but it's showing that, listen, and I said this in a group chat last night. I said, one side doesn't have to win a breakup. When it comes to Joe Mixon, both sides can be better off when you break up. That's okay. And both sides are better off without each other. Joe Mixon's having a great year with Houston. Chase Brown's having a great year with the Bengals. Both things can be okay. Now, the one thing that Joe Mixon was really good at that we're seeing the major difference from Chase Brown, and I fully admit it, is fumbling. But Chase Brown is a lot more explosive. He forces more missed tackles. And you're just seeing more of that each and every week. So I think that a breakup can be a good thing for both sides. And this is the epitome of just that.
Yeah. Just to get back to the point of the missed tackles, do you know how many of them were on the catch and run on that one play that the amazing Joe Burrow play? Because there had to have been at least 2 on that one.
Probably, yeah.
So I don't know how inflated that stat would have been because of that one particular play. But I mean, the point still stands. I mean, that Chase Brown has been a lot more electric than, you know, what we've seen Joe Mixon to be for the past couple of years. You know, and I thought he ran pretty well, pretty good as well. And aside from the receiving game, I mean, he ran 22 times for 86 yards, 3.9 yards per carry. It's not, you know, crazy great statistic, you know, running the football, but he was always keeping the offense on schedule. It felt like in that game, you know,
didn't have many negative runs.
No, I think he might have had 2 or 3 negative runs, but one of them, Chris Collinsworth pointed out, you know, that Chase Brown just straight up missed the hole on one of the plays, and it was kind of crucial. But 27 yards came on a breakaway run. It was crucial for them to get their first touchdown their first touchdown of the game in the third quarter. So yeah, I thought Chase Brown played pretty well. Props to Burrow again. I mean, it's you know, I think we sound like broken records when we talk about Burrow, but he played phenomenal yet again. 28 of 50, completion percentage 56%. That's not great, but 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 4 big time throws, 1 turnover worthy play. He was throwing the ball down the field. His average depth of target was 11.9 yards. How much of that was inflated by the deep pass to T. Higgins on 4th down, I don't know. But still, great game from Joe Burrow. 2 of those touchdowns came on 4th down.
Including a deep ball on 4th down, right? It worked. Yep. It worked.
Yep. The deep ball was great.
And I mean, like Payne says here, running in, he's the MVP if they're 7-4.
I think he's up there. He's probably top 2 with Lamar right now.
Josh Allen.
I still don't think Josh Allen's anywhere close.
Name recognition. He'll probably pop his name in there, especially if the Bills keep winning. Because, I mean, at the same time, you could say, who the hell are Josh Allen's wide receivers?
We should stop letting journalists decide who gets the MVP.
Hey, no.
It's not any journalist that doesn't know. You know, who does Dan Orlovsky get an MVP vote?
I doubt it. He's probably not a member of the Pro Football Writers Association.
Do you have to be in the PFWA?
I would assume so. I assume so. That's who it is. And it's AP MVP, I think. So it might be AP Writers as well.
Anyways, Burrow played really well. And yeah, I'd say he's probably an MVP candidate right now if the record was a little bit better than what it was. But yeah, great game from him. Jamar was okay.
Two big drops.
7 of 13 targets caught, 75 yards, 2 touchdowns. Did have 2 contested catches. Did have 2 crucial drops in that game. So it was kind of a, you know, hit miss, hot cold game for Jamar. But still, you know, he got his production in yardage and touchdown wise. Pass blocking wasn't as bad as I initially thought. Burrow was hit 12 times, but only 6 of those were charged to the offensive line. So 6 of the QB hits that Joe Burrow sustained were on Joe Burrow. Mims, Bolson, and Ford combined to give up 18 pressures, 10 hurries, 6 QB hits, and 3 sacks. All of them were pretty evenly distributed, too. It wasn't like one guy was giving up all that stuff. That's why I kind of grouped those 3 together. Karras and Kappa looked decent. You know, 5 pressure just given up. All of them were QB hurries. I don't know who they charged. They didn't charge the 1 sack to either of them. There was that 1 sack on the stunt that Puna Ford ran where he was on Kappa, then he switched over to Karras, and nobody could pick him up on that stunt. I don't know who they would have given the sack to, though. I guess Amarius Mims, because, I mean, it was from the right side of the line.
Yeah,
maybe. So that might be a misleading thing. But, you know, pass blocking wasn't terrible. You know, I think a lot of it – how hard is it for Zach Taylor? And I'm not going to shit on Zach Taylor, the play caller, too much, but how hard is it to just scheme open receivers? I feel like we never get any degree. I feel like our receivers never get really a degree of separation in the game. And maybe I'm just like looking, you know, looking at the game more biased compared to like watching other games being played. But it just seems like offenses like, let's say the Niners, like they always seem to have wide open receivers that Brock Purdy's throwing to, you know, or even the Rams, I guess, in that matter. But it just doesn't seem like we can ever scheme guys to get open. And it wasn't like the QB hits were like, you know, it wasn't like Burrow didn't have any time to throw. He had almost 3 seconds to throw on average in this game. But you were seeing him get hit quite a bit, which tells me that it's taking a while for routes to develop. And I'm just wondering why. I mean, why that's the case.
It's probably the perfect time to transition into some things that we didn't like. And I think the first one has to start. And we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago on the show. I asked you the question of, are you worried about Evan McPherson? Mick, I ask you that question again for the second time in a couple of weeks. Are you worried about Evan McPherson?
For 2024, yes. For future seasons, no. I think this is just going to be a bad year for Evan McPherson. It already has been a bad year for him. I don't know how much of that's really going to get fixed without an offseason of just clearing your head mentally and maybe getting more work in with Rico through a full offseason, a full training camp as the holder and so forth. But yeah, I'm not too worried about Evan going forward. I mean, to give you a history on Evan, I mean, his 2022 wasn't that great. Now, I know he was hitting his 50-yard field goals with a little bit more regularity, but the guy missed 5 or 6 extra points in 2022, so it wasn't like he was on fire then. And then in 2023, I think he came back and had a really good year. And, yeah, Payne says this. I mean, last weekend was a bad weekend for kickers. I feel like it's been a bad season in general for –
except for a couple at the top.
Yeah, except for Chris Boswell, damn it.
and the Lions guy, too, is not missed either.
Who's the Lions guy?
I can't even remember who he is. He's Patterson? Like 16 Riley of 16. Patterson? No, it's some rookie, I think. Huh. That is the Lions kicker. I mean, here's some stats on Evan McPherson. Missed career high 6 field goals. His first 2 years in the NFL, from 50-plus, he was 17 of 19. And the last 2 years, he's 10 of 19 from 50-plus. So that is 21 points right there on the board. Now, 17 of 19 is probably unrealistic, considering from 50-plus, but still, I mean, right a little over 50%, you are expected to be a little bit better when it comes to that. Cam Taylor-Britt, we mentioned him a little bit. He allowed He allowed Mick a perfect passer rating
again
for the fourth time this season. here's the wildest part about this. Here's the wildest part about this is that Mick, me and you could get out there and do the same damn thing. Like, listen, we could get a perfect passer rating out there. And how many DBs? Now, listen, we'd get cooked every single play. I fully admit that. But dang, like, it is just blasphemy that a perfect passer rating happens every once in a while. But four times? Come on. And it's not like, let's be real, it's not like the Chargers are trotting out there, you know, Justin Jefferson or... Okay.
I'm gonna fight back on that a little bit. And actually, this wasn't Cam Taylor Britt's assignment, but Ladd McConkey is a dude. Like,
oh, you know, yes.
Ladd McConkey is a dude. Like, and it wasn't really CTB's assignment at all, right? I mean, the touchdowns were given up to were they both given up to Will Dissly?
Yes, I think so. Oh, no, Will Dissly just had one.
Wait, Will Dissly only who had the second one then?
I'm trying here while you're talking. Go talk.
I don't know, but one of those is on a tight end that you just let blow by you. I mean, it seemed like a missed assignment and zone coverage from somebody on that defense. I'm guessing it was CTB. He's the one that got benched, and he's the one that got charged for it on PFF ultimately. But my God, like, what the hell is he doing out there? Like,
Quentin Johnson had the other one.
Quentin Johnston had the other one. Okay. Yes. I mean, I just don't. It amazes me how you can go from being, you know, everybody thinks you're CB1 and you are, you know, you're the guy. You're one of the franchise cornerstone pieces for the future. It's amazing. And maybe it's a Yips thing. I don't know. But God, it has been terrible.
It was one of those things that, you know, we were saying, okay, they'll pay Jamar Chase. And then are we paying Cam Taylor Britt after that? Like, he was like one of the next guys in that conversation as to who the Bengals would look to maybe extend this coming offseason. You sure as hell aren't going to do that now. You can't trust him moving forward. I mean, listen, you don't know really what it is. And I know Paul Daner on his podcast, The Growler, he made an interesting point, and at least in his opinion when it came to it, that he thought that the worst thing that could have happened to Cam Taylor Britt was that interception against Patrick Mahomes week 2. In pretty much saying that it was an incredible play and might've gotten a little bit too much in his head.
Maybe.
It was an interesting thing. And also Paul probably isn't going to say something like that unless there's maybe a coach might've said, hey, you know, or you know what I mean in saying this. So I'm wondering.
Yeah, he's not just going to say shit just for it to stick, right? Like,
correct. There might be something there in saying that. Or it very well could just be an opinion to it. It might be a little bit of a dramatic thing, Alex. Be a little dramatic saying to blow.
Can we delete that comment so we don't have a terrorist threat on our...
We probably don't want that to happen. But hey, you know what? Whatever it is.
Alex, we're gonna have to delete these comments.
Pass rush, Mick. Not great.
Yeah, it was bad. That was pretty bad.
Especially against, we mentioned this on last week's show, that they have two great tackles. But up the middle, they got me and you starting pretty much. Maybe not quite that bad, but they're not great up the middle, and there was a whole lot of nothing.
What did we talk about this on our show last week? That the interior offensive line of the Chargers is bad. They got guys like Trey Pipkins, Zion Johnson. Those guys suck, and we couldn't do anything against them. You could tell BJ Hill was playing hurt. Only one pressure, 3.1 pass rush win rate against that interior offensive line. That's abysmal. Hubbard and Miles Murphy, I know they're not interior defensive linemen, but they did not generate a single pass rush win. Not in that, let's throw pressures aside. They didn't even win a single one of their pass rushes. One of those guys is supposed to be your second two, your year two first round breakout player. and he's out there not doing a damn thing. And it's crazy. Yeah, so Trey was decent. Trey was okay. Three pressures, one hurry, one sack, one hit. Win rate of 13.5%. That's actually pretty bad for Trey standards, but it's best on the team still.
And he was going up against the left tackle.
And against Rashawn Slater. That's another thing to kind of mention there.
It also probably did not help. And I don't really, I mean, it's not like this guy's done anything all season, that you didn't have Sheldon Rankins. And they're already beat up enough, so they were dropped. BJ Hill went out with an injury too. I mean,
yeah, Tufele out there quite a bit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, Jay Tufele was playing meaningful snaps. Like, that's usually a sign of not great things.
Yeah.
When you're doing that. So, again, I mean, I think that that is something that we definitely did not like. Whole defense besides Trey needs to be put into a space shuttle and launched into the sun.
Run defense was really bad, I think, in this game. I think maybe the stats might have been inflated by the J.K. Dobbins touchdown at the end, but it wasn't like it was good really the whole game. Herbert's scrambling ability, my God. I mean, you know, you lucked into that fumble. I cannot say Logan Wilson intentionally punched the ball out with his shit.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, absolutely. You don't practice that?
If you did, then that's a whole new art.
That's what they do in Wyoming.
That's what they do in Wyoming? Uh-huh. Okay. But yeah, I mean, they gave up 155 yards rushing, 6.2 yards per carry, two touchdowns, both to J.K. Dobbins. They didn't have an answer for Herbert's scrambling ability other than the shin punch from Logan Wilson. It was the worst graded run defense game of the season, actually, via PFF or via PFF. So wasn't great. Another bad, and I hate to be saying this because he's been playing really good this year, but Mike Hilton in coverage just did not have any answers for Ladd McConkey. I think he was the guy that was on Ladd McConkey most of the game, and it might just be more that Ladd McConkey is really good than it is Mike Hilton just – we know Mike Hilton's really good. He's been arguably the best defensive player on the team, not named Trey Hendrickson this season. So, but it wasn't a great game for Mike Hilton. And really good game from Ladd.
He had a chance to win it too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did.
Six.
Yes, yep. He did. And I thought it was
very reminiscent of the Eli Apple play in the AFC Championship.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And then the next play. You know, Jesse Bates and Von Bell back it up. But next play or play after, I don't remember if there was a play in between, but they back it up and the Bengals ended up getting the ball there. So there we go. Any other negative, or do we want to start doing some blaming around? Because I've seen the comments, they want us to start blaming.
Yeah, let's start blaming people.
Let's start blaming people. It's the we need like a fancy.
Payne was asking, was Hubbard against Alt? I believe Hubbard was against Alt. Yeah, Hubbard and Murphy were both against Alt, I would assume.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
We don't have, so they've given me over here some like fancy music, and I didn't play any of them, so I don't know that we really want to start choosing a... Let's try... This one's called Dance Pop. Let's see if this is our blaming music. No, I don't like that. Okay. I was going to see if we had some music to start blaming people. Yeah, some... Okay. So let's just start, and let's just, in really no particular order, Mick, let's just kind of break down some aspects to blame for the Bengals being 4-7. And let's start with, for me at least, I think is probably where I head to the top of my list in blaming, and that is the front office. For me, you look at it this way. You replace DJ Reader with Sheldon Rankins and some rookies. Now, DJ Reader is not really having a great season in Detroit. He's at grading PFF-wise, it's the worst graded season of his career in run defense and overall grading. So that might be a little bit of it, but you really didn't try at all to replace the void that he left, and that was run defense. Because Sheldon Rankins, and we talked about this when the signing happened, Mick, that's not his strength at all. Yeah. Is he's a pass rusher that only is good against the Bengals. And other than that, he's not. Then you continue it. Front office. What's another thing that we talked about that the Bengals probably needed on the back end of that defense? Was a veteran corner.
Yeah.
Nope. We're good. And now we're going to be playing Marco Wilson. Probably to get some snaps at corner for the Bengals. They really did not do anything to attempt to really improve the pass rush. You were putting your faith into Miles Murphy is going to make a second year jump.
Yeah.
It is, to me, the front office is where we have to start with a lot of blame, and that's Duke Tobin and his staff.
Yeah, and I'm not going to just go with the offseason moves that they did or they didn't make. I mean, I can understand that maybe, you know, with the pass rush situation, you're expecting Miles Murphy to make that jump. You know, you drafted him in the first round for a reason. He was tabbed as a first round draft talent for a reason. And then the interior defensive line. I mean, I know that Sheldon Rankins is a clear downgrade from DJ Reader. And it was a move that didn't make a lot of sense considering the Bengals like to go younger at, you know, in free agency, like to get guys off of their first contract and, you know, off of their rookie contract going into their first extension and then going on from there. And Sheldon Rankins did not fit that mold of that type of player. If you're going to do that, why not just bring DJ Reader back in that situation? But also, I'm not sure what the difference in guarantees were between what they gave Rankins and what the Lions gave Reader. But we talked about this during the offseason. The interior defensive line market and free agency and quite frankly, the draft, especially at the nose tackle position, was pretty barren this past offseason. So it was a worry of mine then, and I think it was a pretty valid worry. You know, how they were going to be able to fill that void that DJ Reader had, and unfortunately they haven't been able to do it. They did draft McKinley Jackson, which I think he could be a decent depth piece on a defensive line, but he's not a. I don't think he's a starter.
Joe Goodberry, I think, had a really good player comparison for him today. Pat Sims.
I was gonna say that.
I was like, and you know what? If he's Pat Sims, then okay.
Even like Andrew Billings. I mean, that's another one that I could think of.
I did too. Where was I seeing this? It popped up I was looking when I was making our graphic for today's episode, Mick. I had a picture of Duke Tobin. So I had to find one, and I found a Reddit piece, a post on Reddit from 9 years ago. So I think this was the 2016 draft. And somebody was going on about how Duke Tobin's an amazing GM, blah, 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 blah. He just got the steal of the century in the fourth round, getting this highly touted defensive lineman that people had rated really highly on their draft boards. And at first I was like, wait a second, fourth round 2016? And I was like, Andrew Billings. I forgot how excited we were for Andrew Billings when he actually got drafted. But it was just really funny to me that, you know, there was this post about how Duke Tobin's the greatest and so on. But I mean, I think, and then when we continue and talk about the front office as well, is how much of the contract dispute, whatever word you want to use, has played into some of the, if you want to call it, turmoil, potentially. Not getting a deal done with Chase. Trey Hendrickson. I mean, listen, two of your three best players, you've not paid. Now, Trey Hendrickson is under contract. He has been paid very well, considering his position. You paid your leader in Joe Burrow, but you've not paid Burrow, and you've not necessarily made an attempt to necessarily extend Hendrickson beyond this. And that has to potentially fall on the front office as well. Now,
oh, yeah, that falls on the front office, 100%. I mean, that really brings team morale down when the guys that are signing you to contracts and they're paying you are undervaluing you, and they're not making amends for it. Now, the Jamar situation, I think, was a tough one. I don't know the financials of the Cincinnati Bengals, but we know that they are one of the poor teams in the NFL. We don't know how much cash they had on hand at the time that they wanted to make the Jamar extension. And we all know that you need to have liquid hard cash sitting in an escrow account for guarantees in a player contract. And, and that might be something that was holding up the Jamar thing. But the Trey Hendrickson situation, I mean, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place with that one, because on one hand, you have Trey Hendrickson, the guy who has been an absolute world beater for the past 4 years, has been by far your best defensive player, has been your only source of pass rush pretty much for at least the past year or so. But on the other hand, this guy is turning 30. You guys, the Bengals learned the hard way from extending players the second time around and Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap back.
Especially defensive linemen.
Yes, yes. I mean, those were the two that happened.
Father time comes from us for us all.
Yes.
And Trey Hendrickson has shown no sign of slowing down. If anything else,
he's shown no sign of regression, but what happens when that ends up happening is that everybody's going to be pissed off that they signed him to an extension. After once he hit the age of 30, I mean, that cliff is closer to Trey Hendrickson than it is farther away at this point. I mean, it's getting closer every year. And it's a tough position for the front office to be in, and you drafted guys like Miles Murphy, and that's where we want to start transitioning this whole blame from the front office over to the coaching staff a little bit, because this coaching staff has failed to develop their rookies over the past few years, especially on the defensive line. I mean, Miles Murphy has not done jack squat since coming into the league, and it's not like he's playing well, but he's not getting the opportunities. The guy is just, not playing well.
Let's be real. Since let's take all of the defensive linemen that the Bengals have on their team right now and say when they came into the office in Cincinnati to where they are today. I don't know that you say Trey Hendrickson got better. He's been really good since, but let's just say he got better. Other than that, is there a single player that you can definitively say they have gotten better, especially in these last 2 years?
Maybe Sam Hubbard, I think, had a more complete game, maybe towards the probably 2021, 2022, but he's just shown a clear regression, and we don't know if that is just
he's been
injuries adding up.
Injuries, yeah.
Yep. It's probably injuries adding up. Joseph Osai. Has he gotten better? I think he's probably stayed about the same.
But there's not an obvious, like, wow, they turned that fourth round pass rusher into Trey Hendrickson. Trey Hendrickson was picked in the fourth round, correct? Right? Fourth?
Third. Late third, I think.
Okay. So yeah, like, he was predicted. He was pretty much a day three guy. Early day three, late day two, something like that. And he's turned into being one of the best pass rushers. Yes, he was selected in the third round of the 17 draft. Yeah, third round, pick 103. So late third round.
Okay, Riley's right. B.J. Hill did get better once
there you
he
go.
Came onto the Bengals.
There you go. But it's just not been a lot.
They haven't spent a lot, I don't think, on trying to better the defensive line. I mean, I know you have one first-round pick, but, I mean, Zach Taylor's been in control of this team for 6 years. So, I mean, you've got how many early-round draft picks? No, I'm talking rounds one and two. You've drafted, I think, two guys for the defensive line.
Chris Jenkins
and Miles Murphy. So, I mean, that maybe that is a front office thing too, where they just haven't prioritized defensive line in the first two rounds. You know, also, I mean, kind of, you know, moot point here, but kind of sucks when you're selecting when you're selecting picks, you know, 28 and 31, you might not be selecting guys that are as good as, you know, towards the middle of the pack or, you know, in the top 10 or whatever, which they might be drafting in. They probably won't be drafting top 10 this year, but.
No, they're drafting 32nd. They're not, I mean, you're not getting Nick Bosa at pick 28. And I'm just thinking not. of a top five.
To be sure, you did get TJ Watt at pick number like 30. So
you did. You did. So you can find guys like that later in the round. But another guy, I mean, Charles Burks, he is the secondary, you know, the corners coach.
No, I do.
I mean,
DJ
Turner has gotten better. Cam Taylor Britt's taken a step back. So read into that how you want. But I think as a whole, let's take the defense. Let's take an even further step back. Let's go Lou Anarumo. Some statistics for you here, Mick. PFF defensive grades, just a defensive unit as a whole for PFF. This year for the Bengals, 64.0. Last year, 67.9. 2022, 75.7. 2021, 67.0. 2020, 60.2. So you've seen this arc. Yep. Now, a lot of that is talent. But at some point, they're just going to have to make a decision of, because if we're being honest, Mick, other than shutting down Patrick Mahomes and having two good playoff runs, is Lou Anarumo really that good of a defensive coordinator?
I think when he has the talent that he needs, yes. But that's the thing. He's got to have the talent that he needs. I mean,
like let's just look, and I heard a lot of people talking about this with the Chargers. The Chargers defense does not have many guys on that defense that are like, that would be classified in the top echelon of their position. I guess you could say Khalil Mack, but even then Khalil Mack is 39 years old almost, or not that old, but he's getting up there. And yet they're finding a way to put it together. Cause that's what I think is going to happen this offseason. Zach Taylor, barring something drastic happening, and we can get to Zach here in a second, is not going to get fired. But my assumption is that they're going to say, okay, you're going to have to make some changes. And I think Lou will probably be a scapegoat. Marion Hobby will probably be a scapegoat. And then another guy that I'm stunned when we're talking about development of drafted players that it's taken you this long to mention, Mick. Troy Walters. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Your boy, your favorite person on planet Earth, Frank Pollock.
Yeah.
I'm letting you take Frank Pollock because I know you're in his fan club, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I really don't know how much of the offensive line's well, because I think I've seen a decent improvement from the offensive line this year compared to other years. And if we're actually talking about, you know, the slopes year after year in the Zach Taylor era, Frank Pollock's slope might actually be trending upwards just ever so slightly. I mean, but they're still having bottom half of the league graded units on the offensive line. I don't know how much of it's Frank Pollock. I don't know how much of it is Zach Taylor's game plan. I don't know how much of it's really just Joe Burrow and the way that he plays quarterback position. I think it's probably a mixture of all three of them. But long story short, I mean, the offensive line should be better than what it is. Now, if Orlando Brown Jr. has played at all over the past 3 or 4 weeks, Are we talking about this differently? There's a good chance we are. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. You're saying, you know, that there are going to be other scapegoats that aren't Zach in this situation. But this is where I think Zach might actually be on the hot seat. One, you've had two disappointing seasons in a row. Now, I know last year was, you know, Joe Burrow got hurt, but before then it was still kind of a disappointing season. I mean, you were 1-3, you were reeling, you know, and then Joe Burrow got healthy and then things were kind of looking up, but then poof, the season went away. This season's been a downright disappointment as a whole. And I'm kind of worried about I feel like we're not seeing the same leader on the field of Joe Burrow that we've seen in prior years this season. It just seems like he's kind of dejected. He's kind of fed up with everything that's going on. He just seems like he's kind of lost his love right now for the team, for the, you know, maybe not for the game, but just for everything right now. And I don't want to speculate too much, but you got to wonder if there's like a strained relationship between those two. And
let's come back to Joe here in a second, because there's something I want to say. I want to talk while we were talking about Zach, and then let's go to Joe. Because with Zach here, I mean, you're thinking about it this way. What is Zach Taylor's background? Offense.
Mm-hmm.
Offense, one of the best offensive in the NFL right now.
Yeah, it's been good. But they also have not been able to close out games.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah. That's a fair point. And that is where the question is, and to kind of tie it in with Joe Burrow, is what I think will happen, you know, with this is, and I mean, like Richard writes in here, can't be a head coach, offensive coordinator, can't call plays and be a good head coach. Who's the coach that's won the last two Super Bowls, Nick? I think he calls plays too.
Oh, he calls the best plays.
Yes. And Robert says, I don't think Dan Pitcher is a good choice for offensive coordinator. I just don't know. You can make the argument that they have not been closing out games. Well, that is a safe thing on the offensive side of the ball and 100% accurate. But, I mean, the offense has not been the problem. It's not been. I mean, look at those stats. The Bengals have scored 30 points how many times this year?
More often than not.
Yeah, and they're not winning those games. It's just like this. But I think what will happen here is it's they're going to sit down and they're going to ask Joe Burrow, and it'll probably in a lot of ways be Joe Burrow's decision when it comes to Zach Taylor.
It will. No, it will 100%. I mean, he's the one that you're paying all the money to.
He's the only one that matters.
Yeah.
He's the only one that matters in that building right now. As long as number nine is happy, the rest is irrelevant. Now, and this is a discussion for another day, but it's like, okay, if they do move on, you know, obviously I think the name that there are a couple of names that everyone's going to want to say. I think you're going to hear three names right off the bat.
Ben Johnson, but
Bobby Slowick was not one of the three that I was going to mention. Ben Johnson,
Joe Brady,
and the one that I want, Bill Belichick. And I don't want any part of that. I don't want any part of that. So I think those are going to be the three names.
Another one I think will get.
And that one would not excite me at all. That would not excite me at all. But you mentioned Joe Burrow and the leadership there. You saw it at the end of the win against the Raiders. We're in the locker room. And he said, get your bodies right, like, it's time to do this. And you kind of saw that leadership throughout the Ravens game, and he played his ass off.
Yeah.
And I think it is starting to weigh on him, because even like they asked him on Evan McPherson, pretty much saying, I don't know. Like, that's his job. He's got to make those kicks. It probably is starting to weigh on him. And I don't really know how you can do this, because, I mean, does he deserve some blame for how the season is going? It's tough to blame him because you look at his numbers and it's like, damn, what the hell else can he do? But it's maybe the other stuff that he's maybe struggling a little bit with, and that is maybe not what you want from your leader.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I imagine nobody's more frustrated right now than Joe Burrow is. And, maybe I'm blowing it out of proportion, but he just doesn't. I don't know. It just seems like his energy or whatever, and maybe I'm reading too much into it. It's been fairly negative around the team so far this season. I think he's probably just fed up with a lot of things. He just absolutely he didn't like go off on who was it, Kelsey Conway that asked that. Was it Kelsey that asked that question?
I honestly just heard his recap. I just heard his answer. I didn't hear who had asked it.
It's just like, is this the most frustrating season for you? He's like, yeah. He's like, the reporter, I'm thinking it's Kelsey Conway. It was a female reporter. It might not have been Kelsey. It might have been a different reporter. But then they just follow up with, why has this been the most frustrating season for you? And he's just like, it's pretty self-explanatory, but you're thinking – You know he's thinking, are you effing kidding me asking me that question? It's like the dumbest question you've ever asked, like I've ever heard. It just seems like he's just gone through it this year. And it sucks because he's putting up great numbers. But also, he's the one that's got to close out the games too. I mean, he closed out the game against the Ravens, I think. I mean, you can't do anything about two penalties happening that should have been called but weren't called on that play. But you had four opportunities to close out this game against the Chargers with their defense reeling. And
he had the opportunities against the Patriots. He had the opportunities against the Patriots. Now, that was just an atrocity in many ways.
Yeah.
He had the opportunities there. I mean, he's had those opportunities.
He had the opportunity against the Chiefs to run out the clock and get a couple first downs and close out the game, and you didn't do it. You run out the clock, you get a couple of first downs there. You're not put in a situation where Dejon Anthony has a pass interference. So, I mean, some of this kind of does go on Burrow in the same regard that I think it does go on Zach Taylor, where, you know, you guys haven't been able to close out games on the offensive side of the ball.
You think of it about it is that, and listen, that's a tough throw to make, but he threw the go ball to Jamar Chase down the sideline.
Oh God.
You know exactly what you probably were having flashbacks to me. SoFi Stadium, Jamar Chase wide open down the field, late fourth quarter, close game. I was having bad flashbacks.
This wasn't an offensive line or maybe Joe Burrow. I don't know if Joe Burrow got hit on
He didn't get hit like
the
he
ball
did.
Definitely got there. It just got a little too much there, as in it was slightly overthrown.
And it was. And that is a tough play to mention. Evan McPherson, we touched on him just as far as a little bit of blaming, but just to at least mention some of the stats, I touched on it, is 50 plus yarders. But I mean, you look at it in games this season, he missed an extra point against the Chiefs. Washington, he missed a field goal. I don't really know that that matters. Washington Bengals defense could not stop them to save their lives. The Baltimore missed field goal. How much of that goes on him? How much of that goes on Ryan Rico? Probably more on Rico and so on. And then obviously the Chargers game when it comes to that. But the final thing in the blame, Mick, that at least I wanted to mention, and it's us. Yeah, exactly. Is, you know, were our expectations too high?
I mean, I think, and I'm not going to throw us into this because I think our expectations were somewhat reasonable.
And I think we're saying because
we predicted 10-7, right? 10-7.
Collectively, us, not me and you. We're not taking the blame for everybody, right? Or are you willing to do that? Okay.
No, I think a lot of fans are expecting us just because Joe Burrow was back for a whole season. Like, oh, we're still going to go 13-4, 12-5, win the division, and make a playoff run, right? And I think you and I are both very skeptical coming into the season about how the defense was going to play with who I thought was our best defensive player, DJ Reader, out the door. You didn't really have a viable solution for replacing him. But then again, like you saw that, you know, the safety room was supposed to get back to where it was with Von Bell coming back, with Geno Stone being acquired from the Ravens after having the year that he had last year in Baltimore.
You thought Cam Taylor-Britt was going to take that. Yep. I mean, you look at it right here, Mick. I have my sticky note of my bold predictions. Cam Taylor-Britt will be the first Bengal with 8-plus interceptions since Reggie Nelson. That was a great prediction by me.
Really good one.
I think he's maybe
had a second one. No, he should have had a second one.
It has been... it is just, you thought, okay, you've got a really good pass rusher. Miles Murphy, you're two jump. You're thinking that this will be the year that's doing this. And almost all of the things that if you wanted to be an optimist about the Bengals,
they
especially
fell flat
when it comes to the defense. Yet I don't know that any of those optimistic takes have hit.
No, none of them have. And we don't know what
guess,
it is.
Okay.
Is it a scouting issue or is it a development issue? Is it
maybe the one that did hit was Dax Hill will be a decent corner.
Dax Hill. Okay. Yeah, Dax Hill.
There's the one thing that hit.
And DJ Turner. DJ Turner showed improvement, but we didn't really take a stance on that one. We thought he was kind of toast.
It has been just, and that's where I think is it on us for having unrealistic expectations? And I think as a whole, no. Because, I mean, let's look at the team. I mean, you lost to the freaking Patriots week one at home. Yeah. At home. Now, listen, the Commanders at the time we thought was a bad loss. That's actually not really that bad of a loss, obviously. Yeah, but still,
they're playing really well this year.
Jaden Daniels, really freaking good. You know, Panthers, that game close to getting that. I mean, they won, but there were at least some moments in there where we said, okay, like, what are we doing here? You know, Ravens at home, that's a game. You're up 10 twice against them. You got to find a way to win the game.
Yeah.
It is these expectations where I don't think are that unrealistic, and they're just not finding a way to close the door. And there's a lot of blame to go around. And I really don't think, if you're looking at the pie, I know Duke Tobin loves talking about pie. Which slice of pie is biggest when it comes to pie, when it comes to blame for you?
I mean, I got to go with the coaching staff. I mean,
and see, I think it's the front.
I don't think the front office has helped by any means, but I think this was a tough free agency class to try and find some long-term solutions. And I think that's why they signed a lot of those guys to the contracts that they did. The good news is for the front office, and this is why I won't give them too much blame. Maybe they deserve more blame for this year, but they have put themselves in a position to quickly get themselves out of this rut going forward. I mean, a lot of these contracts they can get out of after this year. I mean, Sheldon Rankins, they can get out of after this year. Geno Stone, they can get out of after this year. Sam Hubbard, same deal, even though he wasn't signed this past offseason. So that's where I'm not going to put as much blame on the front office, because at least they could get themselves out of this hole and they can try to rebuild this roster in a more robust kind of way in the offseason. But where the coaching staff is really disappointing me has just been their ability to develop their players. I mean, now that you've had some of them that have came through, but you know, you're looking at guys like Jackson Carman, who was supposed to be one of your franchise left tackles or right tackles or just franchise offensive linemen of the future. It's you're in year three of Dax Hill, and even though he showed some improvement this year, you've never really gotten the return on investment from him. You haven't gotten anything from Miles Murphy. Amarius Mims, I think the jury is still out on whether he's going to be a good offensive tackle. He hasn't been terrible so far, but he hasn't.
Yeah, but he's also played, what, 10 games?
Year. Yeah. Yeah. But I think you're getting the point that I'm making here, that they just have not been able to develop players really ever since the 2020 draft that was so great. Every draft other than a couple players here and there from 2021 to 2024 have been massive disappointments.
I mean, the ones they hit on, 2021, they drafted Ja'Marr Chase. Wow. Good pick, guys.
One hit.
Great job, guys. I think I could have made, in fact, I did make that pick because that's who I was wanting. I was on Team Chase. Yeah. And listen, there wasn't a wrong decision. There wasn't a wrong decision in that they don't get to the Super Bowl, though, if they take Penei Sewell. Now, Penei Sewell would be great to have on this offensive line. No question about that.
I still think we would have screwed up Penei Sewell.
Probably.
In some way, shape, or form.
Probably. Next week, since we'll talk Bengals Steelers next week. But I think first part of the show, Mick, we kind of got to go, where do we go from here? You know, we're in this hole. I think we started off with saying, because, I mean, listen, and I know that this is not the popular thing to say. You went out, you're in the playoffs. Hell, you might be able to get in at 9-8. Now, is that going to happen? Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not. But it's not like it's done. Like, there is, now that sliver is, it's just keep on getting slipped.
Very, very tiny, right? Well, here's the thing. You do not have tiebreakers against two of the wildcard teams. You are losing tiebreakers to both of those guys in the Ravens and the Chargers.
But you play a team that you can get a tiebreaker against in the Broncos.
Yes, but they are also up two games on us right now.
It is something to keep in mind, though, as this goes along. And hey, you got to buckle in, have some fun, right? Enjoy the ride while it happens, and
And if it doesn't, then we'll just start talking off season at some point. You know, that's
and we
get our favorite time of the year.
We get to talk draft too soon enough. I'm ready to start talking
draft, free agency,
Ring of Honor inductees, right? Like we get all of our fun off season.
What are our playoff odds right now?
10%, I think. 10% in that realm. 11, I think it's about that much. 10 or 11% with it is somewhere in that realm. But yeah, coming up next week's show, we'll talk about the Steelers. Mick, before we do it, because we're going to have our show, do you have a prediction? Since we're not doing a prediction this week, let's make our prediction this.
Do we win the bye week?
Who will be the ruler of the jungle for the Steelers game? It's usually released Tuesday. So we'll know before our show next week. Who will be the ruler of the jungle for that game? Any prediction? Trying to think here because I didn't put any thought into this whatsoever. I saw somebody recommend it. This would be phenomenal. Is Vontaze? Like that would be so good. That would be. It's not going to happen. Like I can't imagine them trotting Vontaze out there. But my goodness, would that be awesome?
Oh, that would be. I think he still lives around here too.
Probably. Like
I think he still lives around
you're,
here.
You're telling me that's a crowd. I mean, I'd choose.
We had Pac-Man. Have we had Pac-Man recently? He's done it once, I think.
He just got like arrested. I think like a week or two ago. So maybe not Pac-Man. Dre Kirkpatrick. Again? Yeah, Dre Kirkpatrick. No,
what about Gino? We haven't seen a Gino ruler of the jungle yet.
Yeah, I don't think Gino, that's Gino's thing.
Well, Dunlap won't do it until Zach Taylor's gone.
I'm going to say Dre Kirkpatrick. There we go. That's my prediction. Dre Kirkpatrick.
Oh, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Come on, you got to give us a name here of a Bengals legend from the past.
Jordan Shipley.
There we go. Dane Sanzenbacher and Jordan Shipley out there to do the Ring of Honor with Dan Heron as well.
Boom. Boom, Heron.
There you go. Next week, where are we going to go from here?
Are you ever going to get your boy Jeremy to do it?
Here's my prediction, Riley. Big Wit will be Thursday Night Football. Big Wit and Fitzpatrick will be Thursday Night Football against the Browns.
I don't think they're going to ask Big Wit to do it, especially considering the interview that Big Wit had.
I bet he does.
Crashing the front office.
I bet he does. Which that interview, too, was from like 2 years ago.
I did not think I'd see a comment that said, I miss Dre Kirkpatrick.
Jeremy Johnson, listen.
That's what I was asking. Like, I'm surprised they haven't asked your boy Jeremy to do it yet.
I don't know that Jeremy necessarily is quite at that level, and I love Jeremy.
I think he's a well-known Bengals player.
Listen, he'd probably do it. He'd probably do it. TJ did it a couple of years ago. He did it the Ravens playoff game, I think, if my memory's right. And I don't think they've done a repeat one. Because your last three games, your last one is going to be Bengals captain because he was fan of the year. And I think you're going to get Big Wit or Fitz for Thursday Night Football. So this is the one that I haven't been able to figure
like
out.
Like Reggie Nelson, maybe? That's another...
There you go. There's another one that I'm going to tell you off air that I just imagining.
Oh, wait, what about OG Stank? OG Stank hasn't done it yet. Actually, that's actually a good, there's a good chance it's OG Stank.
There you go. Is that your guess?
Yeah, I'll go with OG Stank. Okay.
The mailman, right?
Yeah, the mailman.
We'll be back next week. Make sure to follow us on our social media channels. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're also on Twitter. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting platform. Give us a 5-star rating there as well. Make any parting thoughts?
No, not really. Enjoy watching football without the Bengals in it. I know I always like, you know, having those days where I can just sit back and not really care, gamble on games and watch some red zone. So hope you guys get a chance to do that on Sunday if you're traveling for the holiday in the coming days. Drive safely. Hope you have a great time with your families. Yeah, that's about it.
So we'll see you next week for next week's edition of Jungle Juice. And on that note, who day?
Who day? Thanks for watching.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan.
It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.